Board members, I'm proposing that we start. Seeing that in the opposing parties are not voting, I decided to join the voting. I counted rapport, the press, SAGC, everybody else. We are dealing with some important issues. That's why I usually say education is one area that affects almost everyone. But sometimes as a committee we are not given the right offices with the media and cameras and whatever. Because everybody on the ground is interested in what is happening in this. But that has not yet come true to our bosses to give us the necessary status. We are having two main issues today. One has to do with theater development, with implementation, with relations to the implementation of the new program, and one second item which will be combining two, that is the theater supply, special reference to mathematics, science, and languages, and their equipment, and the vacancies in the education and awareness. As usual, we are going to be starting with our personalia. Honorable Mosala has some bereavement in the extended family. If he was coming from Johannesburg, I think he would be here. But because he's coming from Bloemfontein, chances are he'll arrive here when we're about to leave. Do we have anything to say on the personalia? Sorry? No item on the personalia. I understand we are going to be starting with the teacher development. Welcome to the education department. Are you still the boss of the department or have you been demoted?
No, thank you, Chair. Our Director General has arrived yesterday.
Yes.
But it is a too important meeting.
Yes.
Yesterday, in terms of the Interministerial Committee,
yes.
On the issue of the xenophobia today is with the president of the HIV and AIDS Senate. So apologies, but myself, I'm Deputy Director General for Systems Planning and Monitoring, and Ms. Palesa Chobesa, who is the Deputy Director General for General Education. Teacher development, in terms of curriculum issues and teacher development, falls within the portfolio of Mr. Chobesa, and I deal with the planning issues in terms of the recruitment of foreign educators as well as information. So we will split the presentation. Mr. Chobesa will start with the overall issue of teacher education, teacher development, and then I will come in after her presentation.
Just two announcements. As a child, I've been invited to attend the Human Science Research Council 2-3-day conference, which is the Human Science Research Class Development Bank. I'll be sharing some of the sessions. They are paying for everything except the flight. The second invitation, it has to do with a conference on pornography and related issues, organized by Film and
Publication.
We have invited two members from this portfolio committee to be attending that. I'm now going to cross over now to the department to make the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and the honorable members. What I have decided to do, although the text for the presentation on the specific preparation for the national presentation, I've decided to contextualize it within the broader processes and how we are functioning while addressing the issues as well. Where I want to start, Chair, is on the, I mean, firstly, that's to acknowledge that the role of teachers, and in particular, quality teachers in the transformation of education that are fairly widely recognized, and that's the premise we're starting from. The issues that we have identified as a department as challenges to ensuring that our teachers play the role that they're supposed to play, include lack of appropriate to qualify as teachers. Most of our teachers still struggle with their qualifications. Secondly, the poor conceptual grasp of learning areas that they are responsible for. Thirdly, a poor understanding of or alternatively ineffective teaching strategies in the areas that they are responsible for. Fourthly, inadequate numbers of qualified teachers in particular field areas, and that's an issue that you yourself and the committee have raised. And lastly, poor training or inadequate training in the implementation of the national curriculum statement. Those are all the areas that we face. Now, what post-1994, I just want to quickly go through some of the initiatives that we put in place to try and address all of those issues. We have had a whole range of strategies that we look at. Firstly, the question of ensuring that all of our teachers are qualified was a priority. So the upgrading of teachers, of unqualified and underqualified teachers. When we started in 1999-2001, we were talking about around 85,000 teachers. In the 2007-2008 special system, what we have is approximately 17,000 teachers who are unqualified or underqualified. Now, although these numbers may not be exact, because sometimes teachers for their employment are put under a wrong ICD level, but we've been using the same system to try and assess the numbers that we're dealing with, and you can see that there's been a huge drop from 85,000 to around 16,900 teachers. What we have done is to upgrade them through the National Professional Diploma in Education, the NPDD. Certainly, to address the issue of depth of understanding in the various areas and whole range of things, we introduced the Advanced Certificate in Education. And if you look at the numbers that we have dealt with, in 2000 we had 699 teachers registered for the ACE. In 2006 we had approximately 128,000 teachers who were registered for the ACE. And what we use the ACE for is for further specialization in a subject or discipline or retraining in a new specialization. Lastly, it's advanced study. For instance, if you want now to be a manager instead of a mathematics teacher, or you want to be a teacher librarian, that you would be in the ACE. Thirdly, we have, in the introduction of the curriculum, we have done orientation for all teachers in the various grades from grade 1 to 12 on the NPS. For subject teachers, for managers, school principals, as well as for curriculum advisors. And lastly, Chair, we because of all of the things that I've mentioned above, your lack of qualified teachers in particular areas or certain teachers, we then embarked on a better program to attract new teachers for these areas, for specialization or skill teaching. Chair, I then want to say within that context of that which has been happening and our strengthening of teacher orientation now, what I want to do is to locate my presentation to the committee around the national policy framework, because that is what we see as our comprehensive response to all of the things that are there. We bring all of them together. Firstly, the framework provides a comprehensive teacher education system which includes your initial professional education of teachers, the recruitment of new teachers, as well as the continuing professional teacher development, encompassing broad teacher development issues, as well as preparation for the implementation of the NPS. And let's say, just to say, our own our own view is that IPET is really the beginning of teacher training, and you do not complete your training when you graduate, but that it continues, which is why we have this PTD. Because, same as doctors, when they train, they still have to do the intensive, although I'm not talking intensive, but you solidify as a teacher as you are encountered with children in the classroom. Certainly, just to say, we framework and the department, through the framework, the department is committed to providing and developing more teachers and better teachers for the system. maybe very briefly to look at the question of the supply of new features for the system, just general comments before we look at what through the framework we're trying to do. The information that we have on teacher specialization in specific subjects and learning areas is not readily available in the system at the moment, because neither the human nor the information that we gather from the education team is disaggregated to subject or learning area level. Although we've been working very closely with the Education Deans Forum, which is now a body that we've established when we meet with deans or faculty of education from all the higher education institutions to try and look at what we can do jointly to improve what is currently happening. And we've requested them through that forum to collect their data in the disaggregated form that we have been looking into. And we believe that in the long term, with the implementation of the ATTF, new fields may be added to the student reporting system, and therefore we'll be able to report much more coherently on disaggregated data. Just a picture of overall initial teacher education enrollment in higher education institutions in 2007. As you can see, we're looking at around 32 or 33,000 who are registered for initial training, 270 diplomas, and that number of degrees, almost 28,000. I mean, that's how you disaggregate, and about 5,000 who are doing the PGCE. But that's just a sense of new teachers that are being trained that may come in. Again, if you look at the enrollment per gender, race, and per phase, it has its own story. Still, there is a hugely female profession. Predominantly, we still have, I mean, I think the breakdown in terms of race, which we believe is important, and I speak to that, because for instance, if you look at some of where we meet people, like in the foundation phase, you find that we have less applicants. So it's important for us to look at this so that we know that we have people in the localities that we service that can.
What's that AI?
It's race. I know that's why I'm trying to explain that we have found it necessary to still do it, because predominantly the persons of residential persons haven't trained that much, and we want to be sure that we've got people who are trained who can be placed across the country. And then in terms of the phases, again, we're finding that predominantly we're still training more FET teachers, so for grades 10, 11, and 12. And although it may be good in some ways, it places a lot of stress in the system, because we need solidly qualified teachers in the GET stand as well, and that we haven't cracked yet. Now, when the LSTED, the policy framework, which we published in April 2007, commits us as a duo to increase the supply of teachers and improve the quality of teachers that enter the system. One of the ways in which we've done it, firstly, to try and understand what we're dealing with, but also in those areas where we know that we have a problem, we use the Fundan Saga Bursary program, and I've circulated both copies of the framework itself as well as leaflets on the Fundan Saga program. This is meant to provide support for able candidates who are committed to teaching, and they must teach in priority areas, not only in terms of the skills, but in areas where they are most needed, like in the rural areas. Now, how we are marketing this bursary program is really, it is not a poverty alleviation, it's not a poverty targeting program. This one is about quality. The LSPAS is more about your poorer students. But when all things being equal, we would always prioritize your poor students, your students from rural areas. This is the outlook in terms of the number of bursaries that we've been able to award. In 2007, we had 120 million, and we awarded about 3,669 bursaries. Of those, 850 qualified at the end of last year. This year, using 180 million, we have awarded about 5,100 facilities. Look at those who are competing and we're expecting about 900 to qualify. And in 2009, it always depends on the season that the institution, but we're thinking that we should be able to award about 9,000. Chair, because in your request to us, you also prioritize the question of maximizing and in this level of teachers. We're giving a picture here because those belong to some of the areas that we prioritize from the Kunzan Kata Bursary. And those are the teachers, especially that we've been able to award for math and math literacy, just over 1,000. Physical science, about 123. Again, you can see the numbers are really not huge. But at least math and math literacy and English, which is a predominant medium of learning across our schools, again, the numbers are not too small. The others are going to other bursaries. In terms of supply of African languages, because again, that's an agenda that we're pushing to have teachers who are qualified in African languages and who can teach, particularly in your earlier grade, in the medium of the African languages. Those are the distribution. We still have in your, well, these are smaller language groups, I guess, your Kivenga and Kiswahili, but we have fewer numbers. This is an area that we're focusing on quite aggressively. But those are the numbers at present that are registered for language groups. Chair, where we've also had an apology for that reading, this is an old slide, I think, Punjab Sakha doesn't have it read, and it means education. In terms of those that qualified this year, we expected 850 to qualify, but those that we've been able to face that have qualified are 812. We have had a bit of a challenge in terms of the placement of those students. What we did, because it was the first year of the program, we asked learners to indicate because we didn't want to place them completely away from home where they would study with accommodation. So we asked them to raise the properties and districts in order of accessibility and where they would like to be placed. Okay, it is a bit disappointing that to date we have been able to place only 421 of those, and you can see that these are forms that were given to provinces. In Northern Cape, I think one can safely say they have placed all of their qualifying bursars. The one that you see there is a young lady who fell pregnant and therefore, I mean the post is there, but is not yet at school level. But to continue to work with the provinces, what we've done, some of these students we have released from their obligation to pay for the bursary, others we try to absorb in various other ways. Chairman, I think in general we can say the evidence that we have on the supply of new teachers is that the number of new teachers entering the system seems to be increasing, albeit not hugely, but 6,000 in 2006 to 8,000 in 2008, there is some movement. We think this upward trend will continue for a whole range of reasons. Mr. Patel last week presented on the OSD, we think it's one attractive incentive, the strengthening of the Kunzan Kata scheme, and just overall strengthening and increase of places in higher education for teaching provisions. And we think that as the data becomes more available, we can focus the Kunzan Kata program much more sharply also, so that we get new teachers in the areas where they are most needed. Chair, just to go over, I've jumped one slide, and I want to go to the issue then of teacher development broadly, and where the framework comes in. To date, what we've done is to use a three-pronged approach for broad teacher development. Certainly, looking at subject advisors to make sure that they're able to support teachers in implementing the LCS, and that we've done from grade R to 12. Providing better support, which is not your Kunzan Kata, but both better support to upgrade first to your unqualified teachers, as I said, to the LCDP, but also to make sure that teachers can specialize and we prioritize math, science, and technology for the for senior phase teaching, as well as ensuring that we have a special focus on teacher development in our project schools like Dinalizi and Tika. What the CPT, what the framework does through the CPT element is really to strengthen focus on teacher professional development. Firstly, it recognizes that you can't do piecemeal teacher development, but that teachers require ongoing opportunities for their own professional development throughout their career. What we did then after we published the policy framework for the continuous professional development of teachers, we established a task team, which is a joint task team between the Department of Education and the South African Task Force for Educators, to design a CPT curriculum. And this was meant to encourage and both support the continuing professional development of teachers. We are finalizing the conceptual design now, and we'll be piloting the implementation of the CPTD system starting in September, which should lead us to a final plan that can be rolled out and phased in from 2009. Now, what the CPTD system looks at is, as I said, the continued professional development of teachers. I said when I started that our own view is that when you train as a teacher at the beginning, you don't complete your training. New things come up, new curricula are introduced, and you need to keep yourself up to date all the time to sharpen your understanding. And these, so we're looking at activities that may include formal qualifications, but also informal development activities. There are three types of activities that we're proposing should be recognized through the CPTD system. The first category is one of activities that the teacher himself or herself, through a whole range of mechanisms, including the IQMS, may decide are areas that they themselves want to develop in so that they can improve in their professional practice. That's the first area, so the teachers can say, I know I'm weak in this area, and therefore I want to look for programs that will develop me in that area. The second area is of activities that the school itself, you will know that we've got the whole school evaluation policy, which allows us to look at areas of gaps in a particular school and area that needs development. And that's what it is about, the school saying we are not performing too well in math and science, and therefore we want you to go into math and science programs. The third one is an area where we're saying it's about system priority activities. For instance, the introduction of the new curriculum program. And because the system believes that with the introduction of, let's say, math literacy, teachers need training in math literacy, that's the kind of activity that would fall into that category. That's about the CPTD system itself. Lastly, I want to go to current initiatives, therefore, that are in the system to support teachers, particularly for teachers with intermediate qualifications. Okay, I think we have duplicated some of the slides, but these are the numbers which we have come earlier. In terms of the 8th and 12th and specialist teachers, in 2007, we had over 1,235 teachers who were supported to the ACE to complete ACE in math, science, and technology. And many of these teachers are expected to graduate before the end of this year. In 2008, 2,000 new teachers are being supported, again, through ACE programs in math, science, and technology. And 11 universities are participating in these programs. Here we have plans going forward, and basically, firstly, as I said, we're piloting the implementation of the CPTD system. We're expecting to roll it out by the beginning of next year. But also, we committed as a community that all teachers in the system become fully qualified and competent to teach in the areas of specialization. And we recognize the importance of bringing coherence to the system. And that's why we're working now much more within the parameters of the National Framework of Teacher Education. We have embarked on a major research project to collect data on un- and underqualified teachers in the system. And that is also to respond to what we have said in the conclusion of the CPT, of the OSC, where we said by 2013, no teachers should still be unqualified or underqualified in the system, and that's what we're working towards. A five-year plan for a focused clinic approach to teacher grading in particular is being developed and released by the end of the year. That plan, which will complement the plan to ensure continued professional development, will also be implemented from 2009. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Since the presentation are related, can I propose that we talk about others before I ask questions? Because they are related. Are we up to that? Yes. Yes. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I'll continue where Mr. Chobeka had left off. The presentation that I will concentrate on is the vacancy rate and putting of vacancies in education, particularly in terms of the recruitment of foreign educators. Chair, I will just share with the House the table of vacant posts in provinces. The utilization of Section 6A and 6B of the Educators Employment Act is unemployed educator database and recruitment of foreign educators. See, this particular table indicates the number of posts that have been established on the personnel system for provinces. And then it also indicates the number of vacancies. See, I want to make it very, very clear, and therefore there's a big health warning. There's a big health warning at the bottom of the table. The above vacancies are not entirely vacant. And I will elaborate in terms of what the problems are. There are system figures from the personnel system. Some of them are occupied by temporary educators or marked posts that are not used. Now, I want to say we are having challenges around the administration of the personnel system in terms of the posts. The public, DBSA themselves, have also released this particular report, and there is a process underway of de-establishing posts. What happens on the personnel system, Chair, and I want to take a few minutes to explain. In order, posts are created on the first cell system. So, if you have a school and you establish 30 posts, you let all those posts on the system and you pay educators. And promptly go on creating posts. It is a technical database issue where they create these posts. The challenges that it provides for us is that we are unable to determine exactly whether a vacancy that shows up on the personnel system is an actual vacancy or it is a post that is that's supposed to have been closed down or not. So, these rates that are particularly given here are an administrative rate. Now, we indicated to provinces that we will utilize this. We will utilize this information because it is their responsibility to ensure that the system is as accurate as is possible. And it needs to do the administrative work that is required to establish and de-establish particular posts. The same table is then just shown up in terms of the allocation of posts number-wise and a graphical representation of the vacancies as shown on the personnel system. Now, Chair, one easy calculation we can make is that the total number of posts actually adds up to, the total number of posts, which are not added yet, is 443,000. Now, clearly, we don't have 443,000 people employed. So, if we take the total number of posts for 2008, 443,401. If you count the number of vacancies there, it is 67,000. The difference between 443 and
67,375,000.
We actually...
Sorry, I want to follow you. What
I'm saying is that, what I want to make very clear with the health warning, is that these are the figures from the first health system, the system that pays salary. What is the number of posts that are shown are 443,401 for the country.
Yeah. What is that true then?
That will be the total of 2008. If we add the column 2008 number of posts,
are you saying it's 34,000?
No. That's not the total.
Oh, I say you put it with total.
That's
oh, right. I see.
Yes.
Okay, the column does not there.
That's right.
Oh, I see.
443,401 posts established on the administration system.
Yeah.
Of which 67,643 are shown as vacant.
67,463
are shown as vacant.
Yeah.
As I'm at pains to explain, that this is the output from the personnel system that we utilize. If you take the difference between the two numbers, it is 375,758.
Repeat that.
The difference between the number of posts, that's the 443,407. And the 67,643, 375,758. And that just then shows you that the personnel system is overpopulated in terms of the number of posts, technical posts that have been created. So Chair, the point that I need to make is that firstly, there's a challenge around the information around the supply, demand, and utilization information around teachers. We have recognized this both at the Heads of Education Committee meeting and at the Council of Education Ministers. We have now worked out a plan in order to determine the supply and demand of educators. So one of the difficulties is that supply and demand is not managed either provincially or nationally. It is a matter that is managed at the school level. In other words, posts are established at the school level, vacancies are advertised, If it's a school principal, then determines in what subject areas and vacancies have to be filled in, and in order to then fill those particular posts. The Department of Education has just established last year at the National Department an HR planning directorate in order to deal with these issues of not able to be able to calculate the exact supply and demand. So that's number one. Number two is that the number of temporary educators that have been occupying vacant posts have been reducing over the 3 years. We have also requested provinces that they need to ensure that vacancy lists, instead of them being issued annually, in some cases, these lists only comes out once every 2 years. Provinces have been asked to fill vacancies on a 6-monthly or even immediate basis. The minister did indicate in her budget speech that vacancies must be advertised as soon as they occur. We would want to ensure that no post is vacant for more than 6 months, because part of the difficulty is the inability for us to estimate the total system supply and demand requirements, because educators come in and move quite frequently at the school level. See, other measures that we have brought in terms of the filling of posts is Section 6A of the Employment of Educators Act. That is the appointment of educators directly to the school after consulting the school governing body. We utilized Section 6A and 6B, for example, the educators that Mr. Chubeka was talking about, the newly qualified educators, and educators that have been sitting on a temporary basis in a permanent vacancy, that they don't go through the process of vacancy, but they go through a process of appointment after consultation with the school governing body. Just the process around Section 6A is that the head of department will receive CVs from first-time applicants, for example, those returning after the drinking service. They match these applications with the vacant posts and make appointments, subject to consulting with the SGB, subject to the applicant being matched to the requirements of the post, and subject to the applicant having a prescribed qualification. Provinces may also utilize Section 6B of the Employment of Educators Act, where they convert temporary appointments into permanent appointments. Again, this is done in consultation with the school governing body. I come now to the third part of it in terms of the unemployed educator database. Mr. Chubeka spoke about the issue of the Funza Lushaka and how we're dealing with that particular issue, Section 6A and 6B in terms of the filling of posts, and now in terms of the unemployed database. We've established an unemployed educator database. We have, in terms of math and science, and that's what we're focusing on, 724 CVs have been captured. In January 2008, I must say that 600 CVs were matched and placed against postings in the lady schools, and they have been appointed. This database also supports provincial education department to ensure that all vacancies are filled permanently. And we, in the process, Chair, of establishing a staffing placement unit in the Department of Education. Now, we must know it's 13 or 14 years since the whole process of the appointment of staff has been decentralized to school level. And now that we're finding the difficulties of actually determining the exact demand requirements, the supply issues, and the utilization, we are exploring the whole issue of a central placement, recruitment and placement issue. So the first point is the foreign educators recruitment. HESCOM, that's the Heads of Education Committee, and the Council on Education Ministers, has approved the appointment of a recruitment agency to deliver on this mandate. We have appointed a recruitment agency, and this agency will assist with the management of recruitment and selection process of foreign educators. The aim is to recruit 2,000 foreign educators over the next 2 years. So in terms of the recruitment of foreign educators in my presentation, which is the second part, I've given introduction and context, the problem statement, what is the criteria for placement, what are the recruitment sources and some implementation issues. Here, the recruitment of foreign educators is part of a strategy to address the shortage of relevant STEM and technology education. It's part of the broader recruitment strategy that we've been discussing today in terms of the unemployed database, the Fulgam Ushaka, the inter-teacher development. The recruitment of foreign educators is a short-term measure. I must say it's a short-term measure. Educators will be contracted. Initial focus is on 1,000 educators to serve underserved or rural areas. And the strategy will therefore attempt to address the identified needs of our schools. Currently, we have 1,443 foreign educators teaching in public schools. And these have been recruited by schools directly.
In terms of over and above the 1,000.
Over and above the 1,000. These are already currently in the system. They have not come through our recruitment agency. They have been recruited directly by schools. Some of them are public schools, some of them are independent schools. Now the problem that we're facing is that shortage of educators is not only a South African phenomenon. It is a global phenomenon, but particularly in the under and undeveloped countries, it is a major problem. As we move towards the universalization of primary education, especially in Africa, millions of teachers will be required if that particular process unfolds. So our particular challenges are the under and unqualified educators that Mr. Chubeka has spoken about, and how we've dealt with them and reduced them from 85 to 16, but over the next 5 years, we want to move them to zero. The shortage of mathematics and science educators, and the general lack of interest in teaching as a profession. We believe that in terms of the general lack of interest in teaching, that the occupation-specific dispensation, of which this Friday we are going to be keeping an eye out to see where those payments, the first payments, come online. So the implementation of the OSD is a measure to be able to deal with some of these challenges. Last week we had a comprehensive presentation to the committee on the OSD that aims to improve the conditions of service of the educators. Career pathing opportunities. That's the OSD. The recruitment of foreign educators is one measure that will also deal with the issue. Funza Lushaka, the Z must come out. Chair, there's an incentive scheme where we have 500 million rand nationally in the provinces, where provinces are able to offer teachers additional remuneration to ensure that they are able to be attracted to hard-to-teach posts or hard-to-teach areas. The teacher development and upgrading in the CPD system, these are the range of measures. Here I must just say that, for example, Limpopo province, under the leadership of the MEC, is already looking at removing foundation faith teachers, putting in temporary educators in terms of our recruitment processes, sending them for full-time training, and then re-employing them, utilizing them after they've completed with this particular process. So part of the recruitment of foreign educators will also be to relieve our current under and unqualified educators to take them for full-time training. The criteria for placement of foreign educators will be basically in schools where it is difficult to be able to get qualified educators. Those that don't have mathematics and science teachers. Schools that perpetually have poor performance. The potential sources for recruitment, as I indicated, is a recruitment agency. Our intention is to recruit 2,000 educators over the next 2 years. Home Affairs has already made a provision for 4,000 permits. Possible recruitment sources are Africa, Asia, UK, Australia, and the US. We've already had some queries from countries in Africa, as well as from Asia, as well as from the USA. Obviously, preference will be given to South African educators. Recruitment of foreign educators is a short-term measure. Contract will run for 3 years. Say, in terms of our plan, in terms of the initiation, we are acutely aware that the educators will have to be orientated, but also we will have to do considerable work within the communities in order to, before the first educators come to our recruitment facility, especially in light of the occurrences over this past week. We believe that that is a high-risk area in terms of this particular process. So that poses particular challenges for us to ensure that this process has the buy-in of all participants. Okay, what's the issue of implementation and when? The first possible intake of foreign educators is October 2008. With special focus on Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, and Eastern Cape. The advocacy program amongst communities and stakeholders to ensure buy-in will occur during the period June to August.
I think there are no longer, there are no foreigners already in the stream of recruitment, so I think targeting October.
That's in terms of our recruitment strategy, Chair.
Yes.
In the earlier figure that I gave, we do have foreign educators teaching in our education system, but they have come in either through the homeland system, so some of them are quite a while in the system, some of them through direct recruitment by schools.
Well, that 1,000 which we are targeting is still to be implemented.
Correct.
Oh, I see.
And that we think we are aiming for 2,000 over the next 2 years. We're hoping that the first recruitment through that process, so our recruitment agency, managed by ourselves, will be in October 2008, then they can take up the position. The recruitment agency is already at the moment advertising for this position across the globe. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. What is confusing me, there was something to the fact that these foreign teachers have been deployed in the Dina Lady. Is that a different thing? I'm trying to clear my mind here.
Okay. No, these are unemployed educators. What happened is we went out for an advertisement as a national department. We asked all educators, if you are unemployed or you want to be employed as an educator, please provide us with your CVs. And they did provide us with the CVs of that. There were 724 CVs, of which 600 were matched and placed against posting to the lady school. That recruitment was done in South Africa.
I'll allow my members to shoot tell them. Can you put in the Mokal model into all the things that we're talking about? Just put it in somewhere. How does it fit in? I'm going to allow you a moment.
Okay.
Oh.
Chair, a very quick synopsis of the post-provisioning model. The post-provisioning model, and we have a tendency at the moment of blaming models. So we have in the notebook, in the funding of schools, we have a tendency of saying the Kuntal system does not work. In the post-provisioning model, we have a tendency of saying that the model doesn't work. But both the Kuntal system and the post-provisioning model depends on one important thing, is that a pool of resources. Once we have a pool of resources, all the model does is to distribute those particular resources equally or equitably. So the MEC of a problem, in terms of discussions at the EXCO level, will get an indication of what their personnel budget is going to be for the problem. So let's assume that the personnel budget is 8 billion rand. The MEC then says to the head of the department, here's 8 billion rand. In utilizing this 8 billion rand for personnel, you will have to utilize about 85% for educators and about 15% for support personnel. Now, obviously, our budgeting doesn't start from zero. You do have existing personnel in the system. So, if your personnel budget is less than 8 billion, it means you can create more cooks. If it means that your personnel budget is more than 8 billion rand that you've been given, it means you have to get rid of cooks. That's how the financing issue works. What happens to the post-provisioning model is that if new funds become available, we say that we need to create more posts, and these posts have to be distributed. How do we distribute these posts fairly amongst particularly schools? We say, look, in primary school, you need X number of posts in the primary school, in the secondary school, you need Y number of posts. And the X and the Y is dependent on the number of learners. We think in primary schools we can have a larger class size, in secondary school is a smaller class size relative to primary schools. So the more secondary school learners you have, the greater the pool of posts towards secondary school. Then posts are provisioned on the basis of the curriculum needs and the number of learners at the school. So if you got 100 learners and they're in different grades, it is put into this particular model and says, for 100 learners, out of that pool of the budget that you had, that created X number of posts, so many posts you receive. So the question will be, how do we increase the number of posts? It's not about changing the model, it's about putting more money in, creating and establishing more posts.
Let me allow Honorable Temi to leave it. I'm still going to follow this model. Honorable Temi.
Thank you. Let me start with the first proposition. The department accepts the fact that the teachers support in the budget of the
three.
In the transformation of the education, that is the provision of quality teachers. You have highlighted the key challenges which we accept, namely a lack of appropriate qualifications, poor conceptual grasp of learning, and poor understanding and ineffective teaching. And that these challenges can be addressed through initial teacher education. That's the implication of some of the problems. Especially number two, that is the initial teacher professional training is inadequate, and you are addressing that by Benjamin Bosch University, etc. Now, we will also appreciate the fact that you have given us a broad approach to address these challenges. And then you said you are giving us a broader context. But the most important issue, which was of concern to the portfolio committee, was the question of quality teachers who actually would implement the new curriculum. Because that is the reality. And I don't think that should be coming up. We appreciate these initiatives, you know, the boundary, the fact that we are still going to have for continuous professional development phase, but that is still in the planning phase and it's likely to be implemented, which actually can address some of the challenges. But we don't get clarity as to the current challenge, which is a reality, That is with reference to the implementation of the curriculum. You made mention that now curriculum advisors will what? Will support. But what kind of support is going on? Because the challenge presently is that now most of the educators are having a problem in implementation. What are the immediate interventions? That is not to be found out. And I think that issue, which was the main concern of the portfolio committee, has not been addressed. We appreciate that. Because even with this staff advisor, we've got very, very few of them. And in many subjects, for example, comments, etc., etc., I visited a Kwamhlanga district. It's horrible. Well, for the whole district, there's only one service advisor, and the judge cannot cope. So that is the issue. There is also a challenge around the people who actually have to support teachers, because most of them just short courses. Some of them, they don't even know. Teachers will tell them that, you actually, this person will just be wasting our time. Mm. You know, they just come here for very briefly. They get out of the classroom, and then they are there, and the person who's supposed to support them is wholly inadequate. So the issue of how educators are being supported to ensure that this important curriculum is being implemented, it has not been addressed. I do not appreciate that. That is my concern with the first presentation. Now, with the second presentation, the whole issue here is about human resource development, I mean management and development. You have addressed the development part of it. The last one was about the management of the teacher. What we're getting here is that if I were to ask the question, how many teachers, what is the total number of educators we're having in South Africa? From your presentation, I'm getting an idea that we won't be able to get there. To me, that is very, very critical. Because you say the central system, where you get information, you know, it's so fluid, you don't know exactly. Basically, from your presentation, one gets an impression that the whole issue of human resource management, especially teachers, is wholly inadequate. And you must know that close to 80% of the budget of the department goes to teachers. And if these people are not properly managed, only recently, you say the head office has appointed a director for HR planning. Implicit in that is that what about in the provinces? Do we have people at an appropriate level to manage this huge budget, to manage these challenges that we are having? Because the whole issue is about management of this resource. One gets an idea that the bigger challenge is about the management of this. And this is very, very important. If we're about to get to 50 years, we still don't have appropriate systems. We are still going to develop them. Because what you've mentioned there about appointment, which we're interested to know, how many teachers actually, because we must first identify what is the problem. To have a shortage, we don't get a teacher there because of poor management of human resources. What you are saying is as far as measures to be taken, all of these are acts, are practices that we all know. That the HOT must do this and that and that. The question is, why that is not being done? It goes back to the question that how is the whole this important issue in there? Can we get an idea? You intend appointing all your already appointed directors. Head office, whatever in the provinces, do we have someone appropriately appointed at the director level or even as the chief directorate? Or is just somebody, you know, junior and a couple? Because to me, a call seems to rely that we don't have appropriate people who will be able to manage this important component, human resource management. so that we're having appropriate systems, so that if you want information, because without appropriate data, how do you recruit, how do you train, and so on. So to me, the problem centers around human management. If you can be given more details, how is this thing being planned at the provincial level? Do you have a unit? How is it staffed? Why are we having this kind of problem when there are appropriate people or there's an absence of appropriately qualified people to manage this important resource?
I've deliberately allowed Honourable Mthembu more space. He's about to leave. He's going to public sector automatically. I think those questions were not for you, Honourable Mthembu, for one. I'm going to go on. Come, Honourable Mpontane of the ISP.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
I think there's a
lot of
issues that have topic because we well know that there is no system of education which is better than the teacher. So my first concern before I go into the topic very shortly is that the utilization of what we have already, because we could have many teachers. We can train as many teachers as we can, but if the teachers we have in the system already are not functioning effectively, that would be defeating the very same purpose for which we are recruiting the teachers. So that would be my fair concern. And secondly, in the form of a question, if I had Joanna correctly, she has acknowledged the fact that in the system there are more teachers doing the FET band than we have in the FET band. Is that an admission that perhaps she will open up now a training college which by definition and by nature will concentrate on the training of teachers in the job band? Because, for instance, I don't hear anything about training of teachers in the foundation phase, which is very critical, and also in the upper. I don't know whether that is not your competence, provincial competence. But having said that, how would you then reconcile what you have? I think you're opening too many windows. That's also a problem. Too many windows for teachers down there. Because if you go down to them, they are really confused down there, teachers, because there are too many projects for them. And they end up not knowing on which one to concentrate. How would then reconcile that with what is being done with the process, especially because it is the function of the program to ensure that the school has got teachers, but at the same time they are not responsible for the training program, are not responsible for the training of teachers, because higher education institutions where teachers are being trained are not run by provinces. So there is this gap or tension between provinces and national. How would you recommend that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, I think I want to add to and reconfirm to what has been said by saying that the problems that we have, the huge problems that we have in our education system, is a direct result of teachers. Not enough teachers, too many vacancies, not properly qualified teachers, and so on. And therefore, this is a very, very important topic today. And I want to agree, cannot do anything else but to agree with the fact that if you talk to teachers, one of the first things they would tell you is that the teacher support, is wholly and completely inadequate, to put it lightly. And I think it's important for us to know what's going to be done about that as well. It is also of great concern that, where we are today, and we still have figures concerning vacancies that are apparently not accurate. And I think we'd like to know what is going to be done, that this would not happen again. That we have alarming figures in front of us, but then it is euphemized by saying that, it may not be accurate. I don't know what that actually tells us. As far as these vacancies are concerned, I want to know from you whether we shouldn't look at the whole appointment process again, and whether there are not possibilities of shortening that. For instance, I know that according to the legislation, I think there's an opportunity to put in a dispute within a period of 90 days. That's 3 months. Things like that, Can't we tighten up the legislation? Can't we look at practical things like that to make sure that this process is not such a long and cumbersome process that really makes the employment process almost impossible? That's the problem we have. The process is completely too long. That's why we sit with vacancies and disputes and things for months and months. Secondly, I'd like to know from you whether, when exactly was this agency appointed that is going to recruit foreign educators, and what the feedback is that you have you been given any feedback? Is there interest in joining the teaching profession in South Africa? And if there is, from which quarters? Were there only general inquiries, or is there real interest that has been indicated? I'd also like to know, there's been all kinds of good programs now to improve the lack of interest, improve on the lack of interest in the teaching profession, such as, for instance, bursaries, better salaries. I know some of these things are still kicking in, but you've had an advocacy process and program as far as all of this is concerned to get more teachers into the profession. Did you have a specific target? Do you have a specific target in mind? And what target should have been reached by now, if there is any target there? And what is the impact of these measures that you've taken thus far, or is it difficult to say now? And last thing is the whole question of the... One would have expected that the question of the reintroduction of teacher colleges would at least have been dealt with in some other way during this presentation. Is that on the department's list? Are we going to hear from the department as far as that is concerned? And what is the thinking in the department as far as that is concerned? Because clearly that can play a huge part in turning the whole situation around. Thanks, Jack.
I don't know whether it's not loud, and I didn't take another one. It's playful.
Yeah. And maybe I should start with addressing Honorable Kim's concern. Indeed, what I did was to give a broad picture of what we are doing, and I thought what I was trying to do was actually to show that if we don't have a much more long-term comprehensive approach to the issue of teacher development, whether it's on the NCS, we'll continue with the short-term measures that we are embarked on. But maybe just to give again a broad, a much more detailed picture perhaps of what is currently happening. Firstly, as I indicated, all teachers now in all the grades have been trained, have been given orientation in relation to the national curriculum statement, and I'm emphasizing orientation. It was to enable them to introduce the curriculum. What that has been supported with is much more is a training of all subject advisors to enable them to support teachers in the implementation of the curriculum. The training that has happened to date has been across all provinces, and 1,570 subject advisors have been trained across all provinces on all languages, on all subjects, so that with the for the support of FET, of the FET curriculum, and an additional 1,228 subject advisors trained for the foundation phase. The focus of that training has been firstly on the identification of concepts and content that is new and difficult for most subject advisors and teachers. It has been on explaining concepts and strengthening content frameworks, dealing with problematic issues around the curriculum, as well as programs of assessment. Now, what we have done is also provide subject advisors with activities to support particularly the assessment standards, so that they know exactly how to approach it. But it is true, Chairperson, that even within that, the issue that has been raised about the subject advisors and their numbers, and that was raised by Advocate Down. But there are two elements that have come out in relation to that question. It's firstly the number of people that we have in the different districts to support entities, to support the different subject teachers. What there is a process that is reaching finality now, which is around the policy framework on districts, which norms the roles and responsibilities as well as the coverage of districts. And what we looked at, there was a policy framework, I am not sure, I think I had brought it to the committee. The policy framework was accepted by CEM, but when we tested its implementation, it picked out two expenses, and it was clear that we would not have the resources in the short term to actually implement it in the way that it was conceived. It was looking at an ideal situation. What we have then done is to look at provinces that have the capacity and that seem to have been able to support their schools much more, and look at the core functions that they are not compromising on. And we have looked at those to make sure that all districts are brought up to that norm. So that is what is going to CEM for approval this coming meeting, but it has been complemented with a bit to Treasury to already begin, so that it's not a policy that is you know, something that we wish for, but that we ask for money from Treasury to begin to start those provinces that don't have, those districts that don't have the capacity that we're looking at. So it was at that level, the first one. The second one is at the level of the capacity and the capability to support in the way that are required of those people who are already in the district, because that is also an issue that has been raised by committee members, and the training that we've been involved in has been specifically to address that. Honourable Mponjane talked about the problem of too many windows that are opened up in the provinces that provinces complain about. If you look at my introduction and the challenges that we have identified as mitigating against quality teachers in the system who can do what we want, there's a whole range of them. From appropriate qualifications to being underqualified to not having the depth that is required to teach in your area. And therefore the programs that are in the system are precisely to address those issues. Because if you have teachers that are unqualified and underqualified, you've got to make sure that they are, and you can't wait until all of them are qualified before you strengthen their understanding of the concept. And therefore we dealt with this at a whole range of different levels. Maybe I should address that question by Honourable Mponjane, and together with the question that Advocate Down raised about the question of colleges of education. Now, at this point, I'm unable to say the department is looking at the opening up of colleges of education, because the matter is still going to the minister. What we have looked at was even prior to the call coming particularly from the ruling party to look at this issue, have been to look at the expansion of places for teacher education. Because it is important that we accept that currently as the high education institutions are structured, they don't have enough capacity to actually train in the numbers that we're looking at. But one of the reasons why the colleges were brought under, the teacher training was brought under one umbrella, was to manage the issues of quality. And those of us who are dealing with the system, we know that although we train primarily teachers for the general education and training then in colleges of education, today we may look at it as having been ideal, but the quality in many of those colleges was so poor that that is what we're dealing with today. The quality of training in many of our colleges was very successful. So we've got to make sure that the quality, whether you're going to teach in the DC band or in the federal education training band, that you get, you know, we have proper quality assurance system. And therefore, that's what we're looking at. But we will come back to the committee. My branch is meeting with the minister on the 6th of June to look at it, as one of the issues, to look at the issue of expansion
So the issue is often, the issue is not about having sometimes the right number, it is about having the right kind in the right place at the right time. And the issue is that chain is very, very long in terms of when a vacancy occurs to when a prominent person, but it's actually unacceptably long. And I think the department has recognized that particular issue, and I think there is a time that we must definitely review the systems and the processes around it, especially in light of the issue that we aren't able to be responsible. We aren't able to be responsible. It's absolutely true. Because, I mean, I think Honorable Mutembo asked the issue is, do we have a shortage? At the moment, we only measure a shortage in terms of a report in which we say there are learners without a teacher. So if you can prove to us that there's a classroom and there is no teacher able to be found, then that's the way that in terms of the system we're able to measure shortage. Now, we haven't had a groundswell of those reports coming to us, either from schools or from provinces. However, there are 22,294 educators that are temporary, that are filling in temporary positions. That's about 5%. going on to Edward Gunn's issue, I think I've covered the whole issue around the reason for the inactive vacancies is part of the policy issues of the decentralization. Decentralization means decentralized information and action at that particular level. And we have to begin to turn that around. Yes, we must look at the process of appointment. The 90 days is definitely, 90 days is still, it's still quick. I think schools know that sometimes they've waited for years in which to get a post forward. In terms of the specific question around the agency has been appointed 2 months ago. It's a service provider. We have just signed the contract with them. They are in the process of doing their recruitment. We haven't yet got reports of how many, what they call hits, that they have made. However, I must say, in direct communication between the permanent secretaries in Uganda, Egypt, India, etc., that they've already offered assistance to Uganda, the governments of Uganda, Egypt, India have already offered assistance to South Africa in terms of educators. But they will go through that recruitment process. What is the target? Well, the target is, in terms of the numbers that I've indicated, Mr. Baker has indicated, is that in terms of numbers, in terms of Fuzalusaka, that's what we can afford for training at the moment, and that is what we're particularly doing. Mr. Baker spoke about the reintroduction of the teachers' colleges, and I would just like to urge the minister has issued a very clear statement in regards to this in her budget speeches. And the issue is, what we must look at is the issue of supply and whether there's been sufficient supply. It's not necessarily the issue of location. We must look at quality teachers and how best we can supply them and supply them in a way in which the pipeline flows rather than trickle. Thank you.
I'm funny.
Who is this Yafia?
It's a service provider.
I mean, can you let on how was the
well,
agencies were there?
That's part of the administrative process, Chair. I mean, that information is available. I don't have it on hand. Mm-hmm. What's the procurement process? We use a supply chain system. We went out on tender. People applied. There was an evaluation criteria. An independent advisory committee looks at the tenders in terms of the specifications, and then they get appointed.
Important is to kind of prove our loyalty.
Honourable Bromfonte.
Thank you, Chairperson. Without belaboring the question of foreign engagement on the NSP and the CSR, along with the why we have the situation where people go on complaining that we have not been paid, whereas the have accepted the orientation and the volunteer. One still feels that it would be better to have these people thoroughly prepared to handle the situation. Then on the question of professionalism, from where I'm sitting, one notices that by and large, the present teachers are more inclined to be or to show themselves as professional in a restricted manner. As against educator of old who had extended professionalism. That means you go beyond the core. The modern teacher or modern educator, according to them, education is switched on and off at the ring of the school bell. And as the school bell rings in the morning, they are late with the pupils at the gate. And as the school bell rings in the afternoon, it pulls you with the people that they need to go out. Is there any way with this whole ethic and outlook of teachers is being considered or can be looked into to make sure that they are backed up and good? Most of the department is now also considered to have a common treatment agency, a common treatment section. Treatment of foreign teachers, I see here, I think mainly in that order of priority. So we say number one, rural and remote areas. I think that's the priority issue. Has accommodation problem has been taken into account. And in that, I noticed, of course, among the challenges that the department has, the question of incentive. Is there any special agency to have these people out there or they just be taken to out there in those areas? And yes, last but not least, I see three provinces of importance. What will the other provinces be taking in consideration? Particularly the Northwest, if I'm going to come out there today.
It appears that the problem of the shortage of teachers is going to stay with us for quite some time in this country. Talking about unqualified and underqualified teachers, and we are told that they've been given a chance to upgrade. But I know that the government has actually dealt with this quite a number of years ago. Teachers were given a chance to upgrade themselves. And I think it takes a minimum, if I'm not I'm under correction, but I think a minimum of 2 years for underqualified teacher to actually get qualified. But we're still talking about unqualified teachers even until this day. We should have gone beyond this a few years ago. Now, these teachers we're talking about are the teachers that are actually aging and getting out of the system very, in a very near future. Same applies to our qualified teachers. We have been in the system for some time. They are aging and getting out of the system too. Teachers under training currently are being produced by institutions for higher learning, which tells us that these teachers are actually qualified to teach at high school. And we're not making mention of what are we doing with production of teachers who will deal with grade level, grade R material until primary level, which is a very important basic way we set foundations. This being the case, we need a turnaround strategy to produce a mass of teachers for this country. We cannot, as a country, depend on foreign teachers. It's not an investment for us. And the other thing is, why is it that newly qualified educators, as the presenter, the first presenter has actually indicated, find it difficult to get permanent jobs while underqualified teachers I continuously getting employed on different groups. Now, the last presentation we had that 1,443 foreign educators are recruited directly by the school. Now, I just want to guarantee here because I thought schools were not having the capacity to employ. They could identify the need in the school and refer the next to the district and to supply a teacher. I just want to hear it from that. Thank you.
Abando.
Oh, thank you. Let me say, all I know in 10 minutes, who can then, and who can care for this now, that is not up to date. I would like to know, what is the department doing, national department, to have these problems? You are aware of the social. What type of support are you giving them? Because it's obviously negatively affects learning. But perhaps even more worrying to me is that it opens the system to fraudulent practices. Because that's when all these computers come in. When they saw proper establishment. The next issue relates by the admission of the DBT that at primary level things are not good enough. And indeed, this has got a pain that we have seen, as it reflected such negativity, especially with the great top performance. Who are not producing quality capital. And that also negatively affects throughput in universities. To find that the average kids have not finished his degree in the first time. Probably no one of the reasons is that, the quality of education, especially in areas like math, language, science, Now, that becomes more serious now because function, what do you call this, mathematics? Mathematical literacy. If now the foundation is poor, primary, which I believe is the case, who are not going to tell things about it. The next issue relates now to this business of foreign educators. Yes, we need them now. I would just like to clarify whether there is a proper buy-in by unions. You know, unions can be very problematic for these things. because the other tactic is that these foreigners are taking out of their members. Thank you.
And the Pandeva?
Yeah. Chair, I was sitting trying to work out, you know, this issue that Pandeva Namo is simply unqualified in teaching. You know, it's now been some years since I was in a classroom and teaching in university. It's almost up to 20 years now. And even that time, even before 20 years, we were dealing with this phenomenon of temporary teaching and underqualified teaching, unqualified teaching. And Honorable Bonamo was raising the question of the programs in between to improve the qualification of those teachers. And I was just thinking, you know, maybe this, will these temporary teachers always be with us? In the sense that their identities have changed. Because the temporary teachers that I'm talking about, them was more than 20 years ago, they may be permanent now, and in the meantime, there have been more temporary teachers that have appeared on the scene, and it's the ongoing situation, because typically, if we have vacancies, particularly in far-flung rural areas, and we don't have qualified teachers to fill those vacancies, it won't be underqualified teachers that will fill those vacancies on a temporary basis. So, I mean, just adding to the question of Honorable Poinamo, this phenomenon of temporary teachers, is this something that we will always have with us, you know, and it's just a question of the identities of these temporary educators for this change over every period? Or is there really, can we really be very enthusiastic about eradicating this phenomenon of temporary teachers that we have had for so long? Thank you for your question.
Follow up, Honorable Tom.
Thank you. Yes, with regard to the foreign teachers that we're going to employ, I'd just like to know about the quality assurance of their qualification. And, you know, how does this work? How will this happen? How do we make sure that the qualification is indeed up to standard? Whether the qualification from the University of Nigeria or whatever the case may be is, you know, what we require. And secondly, the language issue. You know, one of my favorite topics is the mother tongue issue. And I'd like to know whether, I suppose most of these, we're not going to recruit people who can't speak English, but my question is whether we're going to recruit these teachers who can only speak English, maybe another language that is not relevant in this country. Are we going to recruit them for the foundation phase of grades up to grade 6, 7 as well, which may in fact then exacerbate the mother tongue problem that will not contribute to its really eradicating illiteracy problems related to that?
I don't like probably my two questions. I'm excited about that 500 million that is set aside for incentives. But I don't know when was this, who is being quiet. Maybe we could get a report on that later. Because I'm coming from a rural constituency where teachers are along the sea. So I had almost everybody there. He goes there, that's for a tier two. He's recruited, he goes somewhere else. It means this incentive would work. Again, I'm curious to know about this 6A of the recruitment. I do know we passed that law, that act, but when we move around the provinces, we find that they don't know anything about it. I don't know whether we should take this in the form of a question to the minister as to how many provinces are implementing this 6A, how many recruits they have got, because to me, it's one method that could assist these rural and poor something to come up with. If I go back to the Mokala then, that Mokala model, I think what was bothering me about the Mokala model is that it is more inclined to talk number than content. You go to a high school, it has 300 learners, so I can see. You put in your Mokala model there. It says, because you are 300, you qualify for 11 teachers. But you find that in this school, they are having three streams, commerce, general, and science. And find that now, these teachers that are there cannot be qualified in all these areas. But when you ask, and to me what bothers me even worse, is when you get to a high school with 200 kids, which to me would have been good to close. But they are not on the ground, so that cannot be closed. But you find that now this school is having only 5 teachers. These teachers, by mere looking at the timetable, they cannot be before the kids all the time. Which means, from the very start, that is a recipe for failure. But those schools are without a teacher. But when you ask, why are we having only 6 teachers here? Now, according to post-provisioning, it's determined by Mokal model. You don't talk to me about the stream. Talk to me about numbers. And that it becomes a very detrimental effect on all those. To me, that's a recipe for failure.
Thank you. Firstly, maybe let me start with honorable students' questions. One was around the orientation for the national curriculum statement, and you asked whether, in fact, we have. Thoughts about interdiction. Let me just go back. First is to say, when we talk of continuing for better development of teachers, we talk more interdiction training. What we recognize is that teachers will always need to upgrade their knowledge, you know, strengthen it, and that's what it's about. But maybe let me just take a step back, honorable member, and say what we have said about accepted that the first touch was made so that all teachers were orientated. But the second level was to strengthen the understanding of subject advisors so that they could continue with the support and the training that needed for teachers, and that is what is happening. Now, in relation to subject advisors, we have done two things. We have one trained those who are, you know, in the job already. Secondly, ask all provinces to appoint, to fill the posts that are vacant of subject advisors because they are there. But thirdly, through the framework for this that I've talked about, get money from Treasury to create posts where these posts don't exist. So that's the strategy that we have used. But I also just want to try and explain why we have gone with CPTV, the Continuum for Better Development. That hasn't focused us on teachers because we believe that the gaps are across the system. So the framework that is in place looks at both school-based educators and ourselves, I mean the office-based educators, because the subject advisors, as somebody very correctly pointed out, some of the subject advisors may not be as competent as they need to be, and therefore just provide for them. What I didn't talk about, I mean, I know somebody said maybe this is something that we still to come and it's not happening, but it is being finalized and it is being piloted in September for implementation and training in by beginning of the year. What all we're doing is to pilot the system to see whether it works. Because what it allows us to do is especially the recognition is that there are so many teachers in the system, there are so many subjects, that if we think that we will make sure that all our teachers are continuously developed all the time as they need to be by ourselves, or we will fail. And therefore the system enables us to put in a system where we can have systems to accredit programs and to allow high-paying institutions, to allow NGOs, to allow people who are competent and who can run the program to be part of it, but that they must be accredited. What we have put, so that the reach is broader, but teachers and ourselves are being developed through properly quality assured accredited programs. What we're looking at right now, the system that we're piloting, look at everybody, all educators, with a point-based system, getting at least 150 points in a three-year cycle, and therefore it forces all teachers to continue their grading, looking at least 30 points per year in the category that I mentioned earlier. You also mentioned the question of professionalism. I think the reason why this government set up the South African Council for Education is precisely so that there is a body that can deal with the professional aspects of the profession and working very closely with them, from making sure that they are the ones who discipline members to get out of line or do register, all of those, but you must be muscle to face as a professional counsel. The Honourable Namo and the Honourable Van der Heuvel talk about the question of underqualified and unqualified teachers. Just to say, these qualified and underqualified teachers are not necessarily your personal teachers. And I think as it seems that this committee must recognize how much you have helped us do in fact in reducing this, because we have moved from 85,000 to 15,000. At the cost of government, these people have been paid for by government to actually upgrade and get the qualifications that they have. There have been limitations here, especially because you can only have so much money to pay, and we try to do what we were able to do, but secondly, because of the places and what our higher education institutions currently can deliver, and that has been a limitation. But we've gone down to that. What has also been a challenge is that in the more rural provinces, many of the MCs and the SDs tell us that it is difficult, and you can't have a class with no teacher when in fact you know a graduate who has majored in mathematics but doesn't have a teaching diploma. And because you must realize that some of the underqualified are not people who have matric. Some of them, we actually have teachers who have master's degrees, but they don't have a PGCE or an ACE, and that's what describes as being underqualified. And the question was, can't you look at a different way? We are looking at a different way of approaching it, because we think it's unhelpful to say, when I have a master's degree and I'm doing a good job, to simply lump me as being unqualified or underqualified. And therefore, we try the research that we put in place to actually look much more at a much more nuanced description of what it is that we do, so that we can deal with it more appropriately. And that research is coming. And part of the strategy is also to the recognition of prior learning. It's a policy decision that was taken a long time ago, but we haven't necessarily used it effectively in the question of giving teachers the qualifications that they need. In terms of the foundation phase, just to say it is not absolutely true that we're facing a challenge in the foundation phase because higher education institutions don't deal with this. Most higher education institutions, particularly, it doesn't come from a very varied history of teacher provisioning, which is why we have. But most of the previously white institutions train and train quality primary school teachers and foundation phase teachers. But we're finding that traditionally those higher education institutions that didn't offer foundation phase training are still struggling to come up to speed, and that's what we're dealing with. But we did have training, and the higher education institutions are such that they can train at primary level and assess the right people. The question was simply asked about how we're looking at the question of the quality of teachers at this level, again, at the foundation phase level. If you look at the things that are priority areas, foundation phase is a priority. In fact, now, because of the challenges we've had in facing the teachers, we're looking much more in conversation with CM and HEFCOM at killing and narrowing them down and saying, if we're looking at math and math literacy and the sciences at MEC level, we're looking at literacy and numeracy at the foundation phase level and indigenous languages, but look at foundation phase much more strongly. But it is an area that the department is prioritizing.
Thank you, Chair. The question was around the issue of the rural and remote and accommodation. our agreement with the provinces and the provinces are the employers are that we will not bring anybody over from anywhere unless there is a guarantee that there is suitable accommodation available. However, we are re-looking at this particular issue because we don't know the extent of the risk involved. Partly with the occurrences that have just happened now, this week, and secondly about the inadequacy of accommodation, it may mean that we must provide incentives to South African educators that are in urban areas, and quite lucrative incentives to be able to deal with the issue of go to remote areas and perhaps concentrate the foreign educators in more urban areas. But that is a risk we have identified and we're managing. Thank you, many thanks for the issue of provinces. In terms of the provincial powers, I think, honourable member, you're correct. But the issue is we have to do it in cooperation and collaboration. So we're providing the vehicle around access to be able to bring in foreign educators, working with the Department of Home Affairs, working with our Department of Foreign Affairs, and also working with the Qualifications Authority, because I think there was a question on the equivalence of qualifications. They have to go through the South African Qualifications Authority and set up a team to be able to do that. Now, the incentives, 500 million that is available in all the provinces totally, could be also be utilized to be able to deal with the issue of accommodation. And if it's a problem, we have to then see how much of that incentive funds are made available or reprioritized. The three provinces there merely are the three provinces that have already indicated to us. If you get a list from the Northwest Territory Department and the accounting officer saying that I've got guaranteed 100 posts that you can then bring, recruit persons for, and that here is the money up front for the recruitment, they transfer it into our DG's department banking account, for which our DG is the accounting officer, then we will be able to check out that particular issue is we, in terms of our intergovernmental relations, at the end of the day, the accountability and the decision must be of the provinces. So we gladly assist the member if Mr. Mweli is asked to give us the particular fund. I think Mr. Becker covered the issue of under unqualified educators. That's covered. In terms of the, how the schools recruited 1,443 educators, is that the Department of Education issues a vacancy list. People apply on the vacancy list. The applications go to the school. The school does the selection, shortlisting, and recommendation. Yes. So that's the process how it would happen. That if a foreign educator picks up that vacancy list, applies for the post, applies to the school, has a work permit, everything in order. The head of department has to look at the selection process, and if they qualify in terms of the qualifications, etc., they're appointed. So that's how it happens outside a managed process to a recruitment, rather than a recruitment agency. The personal system, I think, the question was around ghost educators. Here, I want to clarify something here. Personnel is supposed to have been a personnel and salary system. Currently, it's a salary system that works 100% efficiently. It pays people, it pays them on time, and I mean, I've been in the business of education for over 30 years. There hasn't been a month in which my pay slip or my salary hasn't come particularly. So it's quite efficient. The problem changed is around the personnel issues, personnel management issues. around capturing the information of your qualifications. You know, what are you teaching? What are your specialist subjects? Those HR issues that are required for us to manage the system is an issue that is last on the minds of everybody because they want to get the issue of the payments going. There are checks and balances around particular personnel. I haven't yet heard of any more ghosts since we cleaned up the past procedure. I just want to make this distinction. We did budget, and it is in our strategic plan to develop an HR management system. But however, the DPSA has indicated to us that across government, they want to develop that particular system. So there's a prescript that says that if we're developing a system in which government generally is developing in terms of a transversal system, that we must then hold our horses. See, the issue of unions and foreign educators, I don't know how individuals will feel about it. But we've informed the unions that if they are able to provide us with the requirements around that science and technology educators, that clearly we will make that as a first choice of employment. Up to now, we haven't received a single CV. In terms of the temporary unqualified educators, I just wanted to add to Member Familiar's issue. The way we keep tabs on the 16,000 are those that we inherited in the system. Number one, the unqualified. There are those 16,000 that are particularly left. I think Mr. Baker indicated the issue about some of the problems, funding on our side. But also we must admit that there's a point in which learning modalities may have to change. And that's why we think that if these unqualified teachers, for no fault of their own, have landed up in this situation, then they must be acknowledged through a recognition of their knowledge. So what I wanted to say is that all these educators in terms of previous agreements have been made permanent. It was previously in the system. So those that were inherited have been made permanent. It is true that new educators have come in that are either under or unqualified will serve on the system of temporary. Now, it's an interesting issue that you're raising, because what do we do in a situation? Should we have a class without a teacher or a class with somebody that is under unqualified? We will not make them permanent, but the issue is that they will be temporary. So, I thought I had back from the gist of what Member Faneva was asking about the identities, and I'm not sure whether we will respond to that.
The question was, will they be with us forever?
Well, I'll go again. The issue is, in a system, we aim in that they shouldn't be. And therefore, we have to put sufficient resources to be able to ensure that we have an oversupply rather than an undersupply. But at the end of the day, there is a choice that you have to make in order to get somebody in terms of the classroom. And what we now begin to monitor, and the identity one is correct, when we say we have 5,000 temporary educators every year, it's probably not the same educator. It is school A that has 3 vacancies, that has a temporary educator for 6 months, the post is full. It so happens that these 3 educators came from school B, and so you're temporary. Now, that 5% or so temporary situation will have to be there unless we come out with what we call peripatetic teaching or relief teaching, where we appoint additional qualified educators to fill up those particular gaps. So the quality assurance and qualifications have been answered that we work through state, and they will not land in South Africa until those qualifications are vetted by the agency. So there's a very strict the language issue, it's only that type of technology that we're recruiting. So yes. If there are educators that speak any one of the other official languages in South Africa, elsewhere with letting you the first choice. At the moment, it's English, but if we do get other languages, so it's, I think the common sense is that it's English, but English that is understandable. So they're also going to go through a verbal test to be able to see in terms of the communication, that in terms of that. So priority, therefore, the urgency is in our case to be able to deal with the home language issue, foundation phase, etc. Shane, you just made a comment about the 500 million rand, but I think it's a good question to ask provinces, that this money has been in your budget, the minister has made a determination in terms of the Education and Employment Act, how is this money being utilized. Section 6A, also you raised it as an issue of whether provinces know about it, and I think there's also something that we have to ask provinces to provide information. Share the post-provisioning model, although I spoke about numbers, it clearly takes curriculum needs into account. But again, the issue is around the quantity and the amount of funds available. It takes into account whether it's mathematics teaching, or science teaching, or technology, or different streams. Part of the problem is often the teachers are not sufficient. Secondly, there's an inability of schools to be able to manage a timetabling properly, so it's a scheduling issue. But Chair, we are looking at revising this whole particular issue to begin to measure a class and a class size and minimum class size subjects, and that's how we want to then measure teacher provisioning. Once we put the target out there, we should then say that no class in South Africa at this grade should be larger than X number. And that's the way that we should manage and monitor the system.
I did indicate at the beginning that the free state is free, there is no free flow of flights. So that they must allow us going to be late, so he joined us. I will allow him brought by Nemazna.
Thank you, Prof. I'm sorry I missed the gist of the presentation. But my question is actually based on the explanation that Matthew has given with regard to the policy framework on this place. I suppose this is the model that you presented to us, proposed by the department, and you have explained that it was accepted by the CEM, but subsequently put on hold due to the fact that it was proved to be too expensive and rather very idealistic. I just would like to get a sense as to how this conclusion was arrived at, and in what sense was it to be rather idealistic. Thank you very much.
Member Kumar.
Thanks, Chairperson. On the slide, unfortunately your slides are not numbered. On more teachers and data systems. You have given us the number of buzzers that have been awarded and the number of expected graduates. I think we could just fulfill that chart. But I would like also to get an idea as to what was actually allocated for these in this different field. Because I'm asking this question because of the experience that we had with Minister. But we observe that funds are allocated for utilization by the department, but we find that in most cases some of the funding has got to go back when the need is flaring out there. So I think if we really take qualitatively of importance, it's important that we know that the amount allocated is utilized fully. I think this is one area where overspending should actually not be justified, but it is understandable. Secondly, on the very presentation, we have indicated a number of, or rather identified a number of challenges in as far as the attraction and retention of quality teachers is concerned. But I wonder whether there is any reason why we have not mentioned this developing culture of indiscipline, both by the teachers and students, as one area which is making it difficult for us to attract and to retain quality teachers. I would like to get your comments on that one. And finally, Chairperson, the issue of vacancies has been addressed quite adequately. But I thought it's important that I share this one just to indicate the importance of this issue of vacancies. And amongst that, by saying I'm disappointed that every state we still cannot get the correct statistics as to what is the status quo is. Yesterday, I visited a school in my constituency. And there I found that they have had about 5 temporary teachers for the past 2 to 3 years. And yesterday when I was there, 4 of them resigned at the end of April because they were not paid for 2 months. And they had a problem now because that the students who are seated in the classroom without teachers. As a result of that, the first-term reports were not issued to parents because the grade 8 students were only taught 3 subjects of all the subjects that were supposed to be taught for the year. Only 3 subjects could be reflected on their reports. As a result, the reports were not issued. And by now, still those students are not taught in those subjects, and the second term is about to end. So I just thought we should really indicate the seriousness of this issue of vacancies, and I really wish that the department should take it seriously. This particular one, I will raise with the provincial department, but I thought I could share that. Thank you.
Yes, maybe you could say more. What does fighting mean, this figure? Say, but I don't know whether I'm understanding. 3669 bursaries awarded. Expected graduation 850. I don't know what percentage is that. And even when we are trying to go to the next year, out of 5,000, we are expecting only 900. It just doesn't sound out. Maybe, unless there's something that is missing there. And if you turn to some 2 more pages in the same one, that's from the Lutaka one again. That's from the Lutaka table. I'm not sure what is happening there, for example. It says number from sent to province. It says 123, appointment 43. I do not know if, because these provinces feel they don't want these things. So that at the end of the day, you can, out of 800, you can only have 4.1 takers. What is happening there?
Let me clarify. You are correct. Let me start with the number of bachelors and what you're given. We're given 150 million. And in fact, when we made the request to travel, we expected that we would be given, I mean, that we would be able to fund about 120 students with the money that we're given. But we're able to fund more, because the bursaries are linked to the fees that are charged by the institution. So the money was used, and in fact, we were able to find more students. It's something that we were both excited and interested, at some levels, not so excited about. The excitement is in that we were able to find more, but what we found is that some of the institutions, this is meant to be a full-cost bursary, where children can buy colleges, because we're looking at children feeling that it's good to be a teacher and use it as an attraction. But some of the institutions actually try to make it spread too thinly and therefore, gain them less than they should have given. So that's the thing of the part that makes us unhappy. In terms of the 850 chair, remember that teachers take 4 years to train, and we give them at any level of it. We give them whether you are course one or you are completing. And the 850 are those that were finishing, that were in their 40s. And that's why at every point we find that there are fewer. All of those others are in the pipeline being trained as teachers.
So if I can just add, I think there was a disservice we did, what we should have, what we can expect, is of the 3,669 for 2007, 4 years later, that is, they'll finish 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010. In 2011, we expect about 3,000 Tamils to graduate if they go through. If the year after that, the 5,010 that has gone in, 4 years later, they will come in. So those numbers there, 850 is not related to those 3,669 fully, because of the 3,669, most of them have 4 years bursaries. There are one or two that are given a 1 year HDE. So if you look at 2009, 4 years after that, we should expect a very big batch of educators coming up.
And maybe just to also add that what we have seen through the, what has been reported, we'll still do the more detailed research by the higher education institutions, is that the food and fiber has actually assisted them in increasing numbers of entrants into the faculties of education, particularly for math and science, which is something that we're quite excited about. But we will monitor that. Chair, you are very correct in identifying the slide as indicating that we have problems. We cannot understand it, and it links to the discussion that you're talking about posts that are vacant and unfilled. This scheme was launched together with the provinces, with the MDs, large discussions we went together to present. The areas that were identified jointly. But what we are finding is that when the children qualify, they are not necessarily taken up. It links perhaps to what Mr. Patel alluded to, the processes for employment. Because whether we like it or not, with the strong roles must exist, it assists in the management of our school. Somehow, the strong role that's played by SDG sometimes makes it difficult for us. Because if they said this is the person that we want, and the very strong, sometimes those people get appointed. And they are not only qualified people, which is why you find even the pictures that we have of people who are still unqualified and underqualified. So it's a management process. What we are saying is that this was the third year of the program. It has shown teething problems. It has shown that there are a lot of things that we need to tighten. And we're tightening them up now in working with the provinces, but yes, it is a problem that we have noticed, and also we are doesn't make us too happy. Mustala talked about the issue of the district and the district framework. Indeed, it's the one that I brought here. It is a policy framework that in principle was adopted, but what we needed to do was to model its implementation. And therefore, although we hope that we can still get there, what we've done now is to be modest because you cannot appoint people in the way that we had hoped to do and have the norms small when in fact you don't have the resources. So what we've done is to say minimally, what is it that we expect to be in place, like the curriculum advisors for all the subjects, so the learning areas. So look at what those things are and what things you can actually have located in a province rather than down at district level and take those out from the district framework. And then, so it's not put on hold, which is what I was explaining. We are already filling the posts in accordance with what is there, but where these posts are not even created, we're going to further it for a special allocation to make sure that the posts are created and all other resources that are necessary are put in place.
I think all the questions have been responded to. Do I thank the department? There's no outstanding question. Thanks ever so much. We really appreciate the presentation. And that does bring us to the end of this. The study group, another 2 minutes as usual. Are you inviting us for lunch? All those were fingers, I'm told. Last is for all of those were fingers. The finger that is outside.
Yeah, now the committee is going to have a challenge on that. Yeah, that's what they do because they are bringing all the restaurants. So, this is only the thing I don't know.
Okay.